We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
This podcast is powered by SportsDrink, your digital water cooler.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Attention to Detail, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Coleman Ayers. This will be a pretty interesting podcast. So I put up on my Instagram, yo, I need some questions, primarily performance training based. I haven't looked at them yet. All right, that's the rule. For these episodes moving forward, I got to answer them on the spot. So my answer may not be great. It may not be crazy, you know, well-researched. I won't be able to cite my sources and some of these things that I just have in my head. But I think that's what will make it interesting and organic and just kind of natural. I'll try to keep it relatively short with each one so I don't ramble on. I have the tendency to do that. So that's a challenge to myself. But yeah, I'm excited to get to it. And I'm literally scrolling through these questions right now and trying to figure out which one we go through first. So let's do it. First one, my guy Yu Ping. Shout out Yu Ping, intern at Detail this summer. Great guy. Ways to train the big toe. All right. For some of you guys, this may be like, train the big toe. What are we training the big toe for? Well, in reality, the big toe is oftentimes the last thing that leaves the ground and oftentimes the first thing that hits the ground, right? So why not train it? In all seriousness, I work with a good amount of hoopers and athletes in general, and the amount, or I guess the lack of flexion and just overall mobility and ability to move, I guess that's the same thing, the big toe is insane. Like, I'll literally tell these guys and even girls to get in kind of like a calf raise thing and lift their heel up as high as possible and just kind of flex their big toe. And they're like, oh, I can only get my heel up this high. And I'm like, dude, what the hell? So I do think this is important to be able to get into these positions. If you look at an acceleration, a lot of times our big toe is very flexed. And it also has to be strong in these positions. So I think to keep this question or this answer relatively short, I would say mobilize it. So this is soft tissue release on the bottom of the foot, especially on the medial side, kind of towards that big toe. All right, a lot of us have crazy tight feet. I can get into the anatomy of this, but I'll keep it short. If we mobilize that, stretch it out a little bit, just kind of hold a passive stretch where it is kind of that, like we set up in a calf raise type situation. We lift up that heel into the point where we feel a stretch in the bottom of that foot kind of going into the big toe. We hold that bad boy for like 40 seconds. And then what I'll do after a couple times or a couple weeks of that is start going overcoming ISOs, pushing into the ground, right? So you get into that stretch. Now we can access those new ranges of motion and we're pushing into the ground from there to get our toe, our big toe and kind of the bottom, the arch of our foot strong in this position. All right, because again, we can get in this position great, but if we're not strong there, if we can't work with some power there and will up our nervous system to produce force in that position, probably not going to be too good and probably just won't matter. All right, so I like to do that. And then I think a lot of what we do, you know, like if we do that and then step over and do some accelerations, that's kind of making it live in a sense. That's making it real. So I do like pairing that with kind of some acceleration work, maybe some sled work, like heavy sled work, some that my guy Les Spellman talks about a lot. We're pushing a heavy sled, kind of mimicking those acceleration positions, which again are probably the most important for having good big toe mobility, right? So stretch it out, mobilize it, whatever, get new ranges of motion, strengthen them, and then make it live with acceleration stuff. That's typically how I will approach it. There's more that goes into it from there, but that's kind of a, you know, pretty dummy proof three-part process. All right, how do you plan your workouts? So I could go from a skills training stance. All right, I'm gonna try to keep this more performance training based this episode. So I'll go from a performance training standpoint here. This is something that changes so often, like the structure of my workouts, I guess. And it's something where I always look back, you know, a couple months down the line, hopefully I'll do this here and be like, damn, I wasn't structuring my workouts well enough. Or I wasn't planning my workouts well enough or more as calculated as I should be. But right now, how I'll typically do it, work with a lot of either small or semi-private groups or bigger groups, depending on the day, depending on the athletes. So typically it won't be something where I have the entire time to work with one athlete. So I'll have a general structure and then kind of customize each athlete's program from there. So the general structure for some days, well, this is where it gets tough because I have a couple templates, wow, that I'll use and kind of structure it from there. The main one I'll do is some type of creative warm-up, all right, just kind of getting their heart rate going, getting the blood flowing, getting the dopamine flowing, they're having fun. Then into a little bit more of a standard dynamic warm-up. These are kind of checking boxes that, you know, I think need to be checked in a warm-up setting, right? So if they have any specific mobility constraints or needs, we'll attack those. This is also a time to really kind of rev up the foot and ankle complex of some hopping stuff, some mobility stuff, big toe, boom. And then some ankle stiffness and compliance stuff as well. So some ISOs there. So I make sure that I'm covering at least 3 to 4 needed boxes in the warm-up. So we're not just wasting this time doing random dynamic stretches, because who likes wasted time, especially when you're a hooper and you probably hate the weight room like most hoopers. Let's get something out of it. From there, I'll go into a little bit more open skill stuff. And it's either open skill or just kind of like general movement work. And I hate calling that because everything's movement, but open skill is like more reactive stuff. So we'll do some kind of fun change of direction or plyo stuff to get them going. And then by movement, I mean like things where you're moving a little bit more freely, right? I'll get into the strength stuff later, but like strength stuff, you're probably pretty constrained into moving with perfect technique around a bar. You know, you're lifting heavier loads. So you got to make sure you're more careful. I would say more kind of free movement stuff is some contract relax stuff. We're moving with med balls, some more kind of power based stuff, but moving more freely. So you're less constrained in your movement. And this is very abstract, but again, this is some med ball throws. This is certain plyos. This is kind of like freestyle stuff. So again, I want this part to be fun. I want this part to be challenging from a skill acquisition standpoint as well. From there, I'll typically get into the big focus of the day. This could be anything, right? This could be single leg strength, right? This could be, low rim dunking for all I care. This could be bilateral strength and we're just squatting or deadlifting. This could be horizontal power and we're getting creative with how we create that hip extension power. So this could be really any meat and potatoes kind of superset here. And this could change for each athlete in the group. But typically what I'll do is go two exercises. I like doing contrast stuff. I think I kind of spam it too much, but it's just because a lot of times I'll have to have kind of stations with athletes, even if it's 6 athletes, like I don't have enough equipment in my gym to have them all doing something at once. So I have to go kind of a station situation. So I have one doing like, you know, if it's a bilateral strength day, let's just say like an acceleration day. I have one doing kind of like a hip extension focused strength exercise or power exercise, whether that's, you know, a deadlift all the way to kind of a pull through like hip extension with the cable. Then I'll have one kind of expressing that hip extension. That could be like an actual acceleration on the court. That could be pushing a heavy sled a little bit faster. That could be anything where they're kind of moving faster and applying these things. And then I'll have like an active rest station. This would be like ankle proprioception or something that doesn't really challenge them metabolically and kind of also allows their nervous system to kind of relax before that next time around. But just something to, instead of just having them stand there. And then lastly, I'll usually go with some supplemental strength exercises. So those will be 2 to 3 sets, a little bit higher reps, just kind of covering certain things, you know, hamstring work, whether that's knee flexion or hip extension, single leg work especially. And this is just kind of building that supplementary strength that we need, you know, as we're moving around the court. So that's kind of how I'll generally go at it. It changes so much. Like, I'll literally have some workouts where I'll have players just sprinting like on a field, and after, you know, a little bit of a warm-up, that's all we do. So it can be anything from very structured like that to just more free-flowing, but that's how I would generally structure my workouts. Sorry for the long answer. How to resolve mental fatigue. Amazing, great question. I'm doing an episode on this after this one, so you guys will hear that one soon. Stay tuned. Next one here is a great one. My guy Ian, thoughts on if overtraining is an overuse or under recovery? That's actually a really good way to put it, really interesting way to put it. I think the answer, as always, is both, but I kind of want to dive deeper into that rabbit hole a little bit. I think for most hoopers, I don't know, man, that's tough, because it's really both equally. I mean, the pendulum's always going to sway depending on who you are, but I think there's a problem with both, and both need to be attacked, and both kind of go hand in hand in terms of how we attack those in a good way attack. So overuse, just doing too much on the court, right? On the court for 4 to 5 hours a day. I think a lot of players have this problem now. More players that I've worked with are getting used to this, not getting used to it, but understanding the effects of it and learning how to kind of fix this. Maybe that's because they're around me a lot and I preach this, probably. But, you know, even new kids that come in the gym, they are able to listen to their body a little bit more. But I do think that just the mentality of a lot of hoopers is go, 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 go. And it's not, let's be efficient and try to get as much as we can out of, you know, 45 minutes to an hour in both the weight room and the court and get better results without overtraining, which is what I personally think is ideal. So I think it's definitely overuse, just not planning this out. I think as hoopers, we should probably be more calculated, even as trainers. Like, we got to know how often our players are working out. As a player, you got to measure your load, your external load, right? How much are you doing, and your internal load? How do you feel? And then listen to your body. But I also think the under recovery is huge, because it's like, we all know damn well the average hooper at any level is not sleeping more than 7 hours a night. I don't sleep 7 hours a night. Because of that, I've started to train more efficient and less. But I know my athletes, I don't like to say that as much. The athletes that I work with, they're not sleeping 8 hours a night, let alone 7. They're not eating well all the time. But I think it goes down to kind of self-evaluating and understand, like, which one am I weaker at? If you're good at being efficient, but you're like, you know, I sleep a lot, or I don't sleep a lot, I'm stressed out, then it's probably the latter one for you. But if you're like, you know, I just go too hard, like I play too much, all right, we'll be more efficient. So I think the answer is both. And I think if you separate it this way, it makes it more manageable for you as an athlete to find a solution to it and to make sure that you're not overtraining. Great question. All right, just saw another Yuping question. Big shout out, Yuping. Is barefoot training always beneficial? I'll keep this one quick. I don't think it always is. I train barefoot a lot. It's because I've done it for years. I've worked up to it. But I've had athletes where personally I've gone too much barefoot training with them at first. And they're like, oh, my feet are hurting. Thankfully, it's never gotten to plantar fasciitis or anything. But they're, you know, they're getting there. And I'm like, let's reel it back. And that was my bad. And I've kind of learned from that and learned how to manage it a little bit more. So it's really just understanding what you're doing barefoot. Like if you're doing strength work, I think it's a little bit more manageable because you're not like absorbing and storing and then releasing energy as much as like a hop or a bound or something where it's a lot of impact on one leg. But I think it's just making sure that you're not going too hard at first. You're kind of ramping up. And then also understanding that we want to strengthen our feet. And trust me, I'm a big proponent of that. But like we also do play and choose. So if we're doing agility work and we're doing plyometric work and all of it is barefoot, we also have to teach our foot how to move in a shoe, if that makes sense. It sounds crazy because I'm a big barefoot guy a lot of times. But like I think if we find a balance, that's key. Really with anything, but this is a good example of that because we want to make sure that we also know how to move our foot and operate in a shoe. But I don't think as hoopers, I mean, everything we do in a shoe or everything we do is in a shoe. So will this ever become a problem? I don't know. I still have most of my guys work up to, you know, 70% of their weight room stuff being barefoot, but I don't know, something to think about. All right, Caden James 24, smallest thing that's made the biggest difference. All right, I'm gonna go in a weight room context for this, performance training context. To me, I don't know if this is a small thing because this can be a pretty big topic. It is a pretty big topic, but I would say just adding in freedom to performance training, right? If we're doing, and maybe not just freedom, but some type of variability and kind of incorporating skill acquisition into it. So for example, I'll still build up with more structured close skills, but when I used to do, let's say a tuck jump or a hurdle jump or something of that nature, it would be the same rep every time, right? I started to realize in reading so much skill acquisition literature and just kind of understanding the nature of how we learn skills. And number one, everything we do in the weight room is a skill. So those tuck jumps, those hurdle jumps, those bounds, whatever, even squats, those are movements. We can learn those skills. And the way we learn those skills also translates to the court. But also just that, like, it's important to make sure that we have some variability in our training because that's how basketball is. That's not only how we learn, like I mentioned, that's how basketball is as well. So getting back to the original example, tuck jumps, hurdle jumps, whatever, I'll still have my athletes work up to it, especially if they're a little bit less experienced. But at some point I'm like, all right, let's make these reactive. Now you got to jump in the direction that I point on the tuck jump. Now let's move these hurdles a little bit so one jump is shorter, one jump's longer. And what that does is, number one, it keeps the athlete engaged. Personally, if I'm doing tuck jumps now or any plyo, by my fifth rep, I'm like, all right, bro, I'm going through the motions now. Like it's like, yeah, like, go hard every rep. Yes, agreed. You have to maintain that intent, but it's tougher to be truly engaged when there's no challenge in it because you get used to the movement by the fifth or sixth rep. Like if you, and this is tough because not many people understand both skill acquisition and the weight room side of things, but like everything we do in the weight room is block training in a sense, and that's okay because it's the weight room, we're trying to develop physical qualities. But I do think in movements like plyometrics, these are skills as well, right? Our nervous system is controlling these things, when to contract, when to relax, you know, how to adjust when we move side to side. And I think when it's only the quote-unquote block practice where it's the same rep every time, it's a little bit tougher to do this and we're not really training the movement. It's just the qualities, the physical qualities. So now, you know, I'll give them some cues. I'll say, hey, freestyle a little bit. It's got to be a different direction every tuck jump. You'll still land in, you know, the same general area. Or I'll do some bounds or some pogos or something like that. I'm like, freestyle with it, different speeds, different stuff like this. And now we have some variability into it. Now we're training our foot and our ankle at different angles rather than that same one every single time. And to me, this creates better transfer to the games. And it's not just theoretical. I've seen results with this in myself, with my athletes as well. And a couple things, just how fluid they move, how prepared they feel coming onto the court, and also injury prevention as well. Knock on wood, hopefully you can hear me knocking on wood here. We haven't really had a serious injury yet with our athletes. That may be nothing that I've done, but since we opened up the gym a year ago, we've trained a lot of athletes. None of them have had a serious injury. So I don't know if that's the case, but me being hopeful, I do think that stuff like this helps prepare athletes for the court better, for the demands of the court, and ultimately will decrease the risk of injury, hopefully, right? Again, I can't claim that this is what's done that, but yeah, that's how I like to think about it, at least. So I would say that's kind of the smallest thing or something that's made a big difference in the last year or two that I've started to implement in my performance training. All right, a couple more. So I'm going to pair two questions here. My guy, Danny Cooper, go check him out. That's my boy right there. Best ways to warm up, specific examples. And then I got another one, SV One Man. How would you warm up for U12 players? So I want to start off by saying that I don't think the U12 player and the NBA player warm up should be that much different. All right, before you come at me, before you turn off the podcast, I'll explain. I think at some point, there should be some fun. There should be some engagement. There should be some stuff that gets your nervous system going. You shouldn't end a workout, regardless of your level, bored as hell, feeling like, damn, F this stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just shouldn't be the case. For a U12 player, you got to keep it engaging for them. Yeah, we can talk about, yo, let's grind it out, man. They got to love this shit, whatever. Nah, man, keep it fun for U12 player. Play taps, play tags, play a different sport. Just get their heart pumping in some way. And then you can start to kind of progress it to more structured, kind of dynamic warm-up idea, kind of like I talked about earlier. And I think the same thing goes for college players, for pro players, definitely for high school players. I've worked with NBA players who we've done some fun warm-ups, and they've loved it. They're like, I feel better than ever. I feel like I'm into the workout more in 5 minutes than I've ever been before. Now, the higher you get up in levels, the more we have to be preventative, you know, the more force we're putting in the ground. NBA players putting way more force in the ground than 12-year-old, so we got to be more prepared for that. So after that, or as a part of their warm-up, they would have more structured things to make sure that everything is firing on all cylinders. But I do think the essence, the crux of the warm-up being engaging and fun in some ways, or maybe not even fun, so to speak, but you know, some difficulty in it, some reaction in it, something like that, to really prime up our nervous system is huge. So D Coop, specific examples, I like playing kind of some tap stuff with my players. We'll get on the court a little bit and just do like essentially a mic and drill, but you can't touch the ground, if that makes sense. So you got to get out of the rim and finish quickly. They'll mess up a lot, they'll have fun. We'll do some ball handling freestyles. We'll kind of freestyle to some music. Different stuff like that where it's like, let's have some fun. Let's get you into it. Let's get you engaged. And then as a part of that, or after that, or before that, that's when we'll check those boxes to make sure that you're not getting hurt. So that's kind of my answer on both of those questions. Favorite strength exercises for the vert. All right, I'm going to give you guys the strength exercise that is bulletproof. It works every time, right? You're gonna get bouncy as hell. It doesn't exist, trust me. No, in all seriousness, it's annoying to hear this question on my end, because I'm like, you know, the nerdy scientific guy that kind of understands this stuff. I get it. I used to ask this question all the time. So I'd say the answer to this is always going to be, it depends on who you are, how you move, what you need, where you are in your training journey, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So my answer to anything with the best or my favorite is typically going to be, it depends. Now, if I completely misunderstood you, my guy, and you mean the favorite one for myself, like which one I like doing the most, number one, I apologize. Number two, probably trap bar jumps. I just enjoy it a lot as a strength exercise, and it's more so power. We'll go speed, strength. All right. But yeah, that's kind of my answer to that one. Respect. Then the last one here. All right. And I have a podcast coming about this soon on in-season training. Somebody asked, 910 Sosa asked, programming in-season training. I'm going to keep it very short here because I'll let that other podcast do the talking. I would say just listen to your body. That's the biggest thing, the kind of prerequisite. Number two is to cut jumps. Cut plyometric contacts down, I say to at least 50%. I like to still keep them involved in the program, because when on the basketball court in a real game, do we ever jump at full absolute max intensity, max output? Not very often. So I like to keep some of them in there. Obviously, depending on the athlete, how often they're playing, how they feel, how their knees are, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the bulk of it should just be easy strength work. So stuff where you're not really straining, you're lifting weights, but you're going through kind of deeper ranges of motion, just keeping your joints, your structure healthy, and then attacking what you need with that time. So it shouldn't be a bunch of stuff. Email notification again, my bad. Shouldn't be a bunch of stuff where it's like, you know, let's try to make huge gains here. I think you can make gains in season, absolutely. But I think it should be finding what works for you, or what you need more importantly, whether that's a weakness or whether that's a strength you want to key in on even more, and then attacking those things, almost like you would in a skills workout. But in terms of our performance training in season, I would say more so easy strength. All right, so like 2 to 3 sets, like 5 to 8 reps. I don't want you straining, trying to get up there. It should be easy strength. Shout out to Dan John for that book. That was fire. Great philosophy there. So I've been playing around with that. But yeah, and then just kind of finding the nuts and bolts things that you need and that work for you. So efficiency is key here. So as always, thank you guys for tuning in. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. If I didn't get to your question, I promise you, I saw it. I'm going to try to get to it. And I may even be doing a podcast on it if it was a really good question. So again, always stay tuned. Appreciate all the support from you guys. It means a lot. And we're going to keep this moving. All right. Stay tuned.